Good morning. This meeting of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee will come to order. Today is Thursday. You tricked me. April 25th, and the time is 8:03 a.m. Members present are Representative Thompson, Co-Chair Drummond, Representative Clayman, and myself, Representative Hannon. We have a quorum to conduct business. Before we begin, I'd like to remind everyone to silence their cell phones. Today, our recording secretary is Lori Rowland, and our LIO moderator is Eric Heinbinger, assisting with teleconference support. Thank you to both of you. My staff, Arnold Liebeld, is the committee aide today. If you have notes for others, please pass them through Arnold. We will be starting off today with House Bill 81, Representative Josephson's bill, prohibit retail plastic bags. The committee last heard this bill on April 9th, and during that meeting, we held public testimony. One amendment has been submitted. We will also be hearing for the first time House Bill 76, Residential Building Code. It's my intention to have the bill presented and to take up invited testimony and public testimony as time allows. First up, we'll have House Bill 81, prohibiting retail plastic bags. Representative Josephson is available for questions. We have a one amendment that I will be offering, and it is my intent to move the bill from committee today. Representative Josephson, if you would like to come to the table, please feel free, and let the record show that Representative Christ Tompkins has joined us. Does anyone have any questions for the sponsors? Sorry. Representative Clayman.
Representative Josephson, there was an article that got circulated, and I don't remember who circulated, but it was published of an NPR report about the economics of plastic bags and cloth bags and paper bags and carbon footprints and all that, and just curious your response to that analysis.
Madam Chair, I may ask my able assistant if she is, this issue is fresher in her mind than mine.
That's Representative Josephson mumbling there.
Yes.
So
Andy Josephson for
just
the
for the record. I had extra coffee this morning, so
for the record, Elise Sornberg, staff to Representative Josephson. Through the chair, Representative Clayman, we looked into this issue at length after that article came to our attention. The issue with plastic bags being cheaper and easier to produce doesn't eliminate the issue that that plastic bags are a major source of marine debris and pollution. So it's kind of like, and I think in the previous hearings, Representative Christ Tompkins asked questions tangentially related to this. So yes, it is true that plastic bags have a smaller carbon footprint to produce than, say, a cloth bag. However, that does not eliminate why we should be getting rid of them.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from the committee? Then I'm going to hand the gavel over to my co-chair because it is my amendment that I'm going to offer.
Representative Hannon, would you like to move your amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move Amendment 1.
Is there a copy of
it's any in your files?
Yeah.
Object for discussion purposes.
Okay. Representative Thompson, would you like to speak to your objection?
No, I just want to have her explain her
all right.
Amendment.
Representative Hannon, please speak to your amendment.
Thank you. Through the chair. Amendment 1 deletes on the first on page 2 lines 19 through 27, which had some of the definitions of exclusions of who would have to comply with the ban, and this deletes the monetary threshold at which you had to comply. In the original version, you had to be a retail establishment selling over $250,000 worth of goods to comply with the law. And this removes that and brings it down to any permanent building retail outlet has to comply with the law. That is the amendment.
Doug.
Representative Thompson.
I wanted to hear a comment from the sponsor of the bill on this amendment.
Through the chair, I'm not opposed to the amendment. It may be that to accommodate wider interests as the bill moves forward, if the committee is inclined to move the bill forward, that some accommodations like this will have to be made. I think the history of the $250,000 number came from a colleague of ours from the North Slope who believed that it might be better for small communities because sort of the practicality of enforcement and the size of some of these businesses. Thank you.
I withdraw my objection.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. Any further objections? Okay, seeing none, any objections to the amendment? Seeing no objections, the amendment is adopted without objection. May I have a motion to move the bill?
I move House Bill 81, version 31, LS0205, / A.
From
Community and Regional Affairs, as amended with attached zero fiscal note.
All right. I see no objections. The bill is going to pass from committee with no objections. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork and switch co-chairs.
We're back in order. Next, we're going to hear House Bill 76, Residential Building Code. The intention today is hear the bill and then set it aside for future discussion and discourse. We will have invited testimony and, as time allows, public testimony. We have Stacy Barnes and John Anderson online with AHFC. They are available to answer questions. In your packet for this bill, there are two fiscal notes. AHFC has submitted a positive fiscal note with an annual cost of $280,000 and two positions. The Department of Labor and Workforce Development submitted a zero fiscal note. Representative Rasmussen is here, and would you like to come to the table, join us, and present your bill, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sarah Rasmussen. I represent District 22 in Anchorage. I want to thank the committee for taking the time to hear House Bill 76 today regarding residential building code. This legislation was brought to me as a priority by the Alaska State Home Building Association. Standardized residential codes are helpful for public health, safety, cost savings, quality, insurance, investment protection, and more. As a residential appraiser, I strongly support a statewide residential code for all of the previously stated reasons. Additionally, on November 30th, 2018, Anchorage experienced a 7.1 magnitude earthquake, which resulted in, for some, a devastating and frustrating loss of property. This experience alone highlights the need for a statewide residential code in a state that has seen some serious natural disaster destruction to house and property. Thankfully, due to strict standards in the municipality of Anchorage, we saw no loss of life during this earthquake. The purpose of this bill is to bring standards statewide to protect all Alaskans. Let us learn from this and move forward with standardized statewide residential codes. In doing so, we join 41 states plus DC and two territories in the adoption of a well-vetted international code. I hope you all consider moving this bill forward in the process, and we are open to answering any of your questions. And I also have my staff, Chris, Mary, with me.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mary Abalzuk, staff representative Rasmussen. In appreciation of the committee's time, I'm just here for support and to answer any questions. Also online, as you said, are the two folks from HFC and then Terry Gale, Division Director of Labor and Workforce Development.
Members of the committee, do you have any questions for the sponsor? Representative Klayman.
So I'm just looking at the language in the bill in which you're replacing building code with residential code. And as one who actually thinks we should have a code for both residential and commercial buildings, what does this do to code for commercial buildings if we only have this reference residential?
So this code is specifically covering single-family units and duplexes. It doesn't, the International Residential Code is not applicable to, from my understanding, triplexes are in a gray area and fourplexes are outside. So fourplexes and up are outside of the scope of the residential code. So this is specifically for properties financed through HFC that are single-family and duplexes.
Follow up? Does that mean that we don't have a code for commercial buildings and buildings that are larger than single family and duplexes today?
I could defer that to AHFC, the question, but from my understanding, what we're working on in this bill is just for the single family stuff that is currently financed through AHFC.
I understand that that's what the follow-up.
Go ahead.
I understand that that's what the bill is doing. I'm just, when I see a state building code, that suggests for any building, and so all, you're not creating a new code section. You're actually taking out building and replacing it with residential, and I don't see any other change in the language. So I'm wondering if there's a building code that covers more than just those, what happens to those buildings in terms of codes for those buildings?
I would defer that to AHFC, that question.
Doesn't look like your aide knows either.
Madam Chair, through the Chair, Representative Klayman, from what I understand, there are commercial codes, there are statewide standards for commercial codes, many and on many different categories. But yes, I would like John probably to answer that question online.
Mr. Anderson, are you available? Can you hear us?
Yes, I am, Madam Chair.
Did you hear and understand the question?
For the record, this is John Anderson. And yes, I did hear and understand. And the commercial codes are not being affected. They currently exist within the Department of Labor and the Department of Public Safety, along with authorities having jurisdiction across the state.
Follow up? And Mr. Anderson, are those international codes that so that the building code for a five-story building in Juneau would be the same building code for a five-story building in Anchorage and in Fairbanks?
Through the chair, Representative Klayman, yes, those codes with certain specific amendments for the authorities having jurisdiction would apply to those areas. But yes, the base code would be the IB, the IBC, and in some cases other appropriate codes with the NFPA, the UPC, UMC, other appropriate codes that are in place now.
Follow up. So that I take it, in this particular residential code, it would be the same kind of setup that Anchorage might choose to have higher standards relating to earthquakes, but the base for all codes statewide would be the International Building Code for Residences.
Through the chair, Representative Klayman, you're exactly correct. The baseline, in my understanding of the request, is to set the standard as the International Residential Code for the base.
I think one last follow-up. Any idea why we haven't done this before?
Through the chair, John Anderson again, I really don't know. I know that this has been a very complicated issue for 25 plus years, so I really cannot address it. AHFC currently has these codes and standards in process due to our statutory requirements.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Thompson.
Thank you. On that same lines, I was mayor back in my prior life. And about 15 years ago, we went through the city of Fairbanks is a home rule, first-class city, and we had our own building codes that we argued and set into place. We had two different ones. One was the International Building Code, and I can't remember the name of the other, but we had some of both of those that we put into the building code for the city of Fairbanks. I assume that this must cover the entire rest of the state. I mean, I would think that a home rule city has got, as long as they meet the high standards, would be okay. but this would cover areas that are unincorporated out of the municipalities and cities?
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, John Anderson again. Yes, it would. Currently, there's 14 approved with AHFC authorities having jurisdiction that we accept their CO in lieu of our process. And my understanding is the intent behind this is to establish our current process, but on a statewide level outside of those authorities having jurisdiction.
Then out of curiosity, follow-up, thank you, Madam Chair. Is this going to create a statewide building inspection? How are we going to monitor this? How is this going to be administered? Is this going to cost a ton of money to have people flying around the state looking at buildings? Because inside the city, we have to look at every bit of the building being built. If it's a housing unit, we have building inspectors going over there to make sure that the structure is good before they put the sheetrock on. And is this going to create a problem statewide with making another huge department that's going to be going out and inspecting anything that's being built?
Can I?
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, we don't envision this as any type of a enforcement process, or at least the way that it's written currently. AHFC currently does this right now. What we do believe is there is going to be some quality assurance over the inspection process and the authorities having jurisdiction, but at that local level, we don't envision another form of an inspection process, or at least that's, I believe that's the intent of the home builders.
Follow up?
Certainly.
I wasn't referring it that they would come through in a existing area that is already got building codes and inspect. I was worried about in unincorporated areas, would there be some kind of an inspection process through the building construction part of this? And I was a little concerned about possible cost of monitoring what's being built.
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, currently that is what AHFC requires. That is our process right now. If you are not in one of those areas, you have to go through some type of a form of inspection, both for the building energy efficiency standard and the inspection process. We call them our PUR 101 and 102 forms. And it's very established. It's very easy to go through the process. Yes, there is some cost with it, but we do have remote monitoring, video monitoring on some of the inspections that we do allow through that process. But you still have to be outside of those areas a certified ICC inspector.
All right, thank you.
Let me just ask Mr. Anderson, then we'll turn to the sponsor. But, Mr. Anderson, that would only be for properties that AHFC is financing, correct?
Madam Chair, yes, that is correct. Right now, we do not look at other properties that we are not involved in the financing, so you're correct.
Okay, so perhaps the sponsor, Ms. Rasmussen, could address that. So clearly the question is, outside of the four home rule or municipal governments that already have inspection codes and authorities, how will the enforcement be done if it is not an AHFC property?
So this bill is applying to AHFC financed properties in the code?
Only AHFC properties?
Madam Chair. This is a statewide building code for all buildings to standardize code to help streamline, and that's what the Builders Association is asking for. But yes, this bill addresses AHFC funded buildings.
And then, additionally, just for clarification on cost, Mr. Anderson referenced PUR 101 and 102. Those are considered closing costs within the transaction. So a home inspection is typically part of the real estate transaction. That's typically a buyer's cost, and most people just pay out of pocket. But as far as closing costs, those can be rolled into a mortgage. So in my mind, this is just part of a buyer protection, and they are, you know, paying a little bit, a couple hundred dollars in the transaction for peace of mind and protection in a property that's built to code.
Representative Kreis Tompkins.
Thank you. And I want to be sure I'm absolutely clear. So per Chair Hannon's question, this bill relates only to AHFC finance properties? I guess that's a yes-no question.
Through the chair, Representative Kreis Tompkins, yes, that's correct. And just to clarify that AHFC is a quasi-state agency, so it doesn't have enforcement powers.
Representative Klayman.
So I just want to make sure I'm following. Let's take an example in Representative Thompson's district where they have building codes. And so if Representative Thompson and his neighbor decide they're both going to construct, build a new home on side-by-side lots, and if, let's say, Representative Thompson's neighbor is quite wealthy, doesn't need a loan, and wants to build, just pay cash for the whole building, whereas Representative Thompson's going to go through a loan program that may include AHFC. In Fairbanks, that would mean both of them, because there's a local building code that applies to every building, that both would have to comply with those same building codes.
Through the chair, Representative Klayman, yeah, we will be, this bill does actually require municipalities to adopt these international codes, which actually I believe all three of the major cities in Alaska, Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks already have adopted these international codes. So essentially, yes, sir.
But if we change that picture now and Representative Thompson has a place on a lake in rural Alaska that is not in any municipality, we'll have these statewide building codes. But if his next door neighbor on the lake, who can pay cash for his cabin and has no AHFC and no other lender tied in, his neighbor at the lake can do anything he wants because there's going to be no enforcement. Whereas if Representative Thompson then goes to AHFC, he'll have to get building code approval for the cabin he builds on the lake.
Through the chair.
Please identify.
Sorry.
I'm getting notes that we aren't putting our names on the record.
For the record, this is Representative Sarah Rasmussen, and through the chair, I'm Representative Klayman. So, yes. However, if the person who wanted to build a house that didn't comply with code eventually wanted to sell their house through an AHFC program where a person had to acquire a loan, they would then have problems in the future selling their home. So it would be a poor decision to not build to code, knowing that in the future you may have a problem with your transaction.
Through the chair, follow up.
Okay, follow up.
It may not be a wise decision, but other than the repercussions in the future, there's nothing to require that capable Representative Thompson's neighbor to build anything he wants. And if he's stuck with, he or she is stuck without the ability to sell it in the future without finding a cash buyer, that's just the risk he or she takes. Thank you.
Representative Kreis Tompkins, then Representative Thompson.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I want to return to my previous question, which was, does this bill relate only to HFC finance properties? The answer is yes, and I want to doubly confirm that answer. So does Section 3 relate only to HFC properties?
Through the chair, Representative Kreis Tompkins, Mary Aparizuk, staff to Representative Rasmussen. That is correct.
Representative Thompson.
Oh, I just wanted to point out to Representative Klayman, let's say that did happen. This person just paid for it, didn't have to go through all these code things, and then they wanted to sell that house. And they're going to finance it. Somebody's going to buy it and has to finance it. Whatever financial institute that they go to is going to require an engineering report be done. And the engineering report would have to go back and take a look at what was the code and does it meet the code that it should have been built by. I would think that that's part of this.
I'm going to ask Mr. Anderson another question, because I'm a little, Mr. Anderson, I'm a little confused now, because I thought I heard you say that AHFC already does this across the state for all AHFC properties. And we're being told from the sponsor that this only applies to AHFC properties. So I guess I'm perplexed as to the need. Are we just backing up in statute what is already practice, or is there actually a change in who would be covered by the code?
Madam Chair, the sponsor is out front on this one. It does, and we, the way we read it, does apply to Alaska housing finance properties in reference to mortgages or anything that we purchase. Outside of that, there may be a little bit of confusion, but I'm not sure.
Let me ask my question a different way. Does AHFC already hold all construction of all properties they finance anywhere in Alaska, inside or outside of municipalities, to the International Building Residential Code?
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Okay. Representative Thompson, and then
no, go ahead.
Okay. Representative Drummond.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Rasmussen, for bringing this forward. I'm trying to understand what is the problem that this bill is going to solve?
Co-Chair Drummond, Mary Perzik, Staff Representative Rasmussen. There is no currently no statewide code. Municipalities have adopted code, as Representative Thompson mentioned earlier, but there is no statewide code, so this is just creating one standard for the state of Alaska.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you. To AHFC, I have a question on Alaska cold climate housing. It's my understanding that AHFC hires Alaska cold climate housing quite often in rural areas. Is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, this is John Anderson again. That is correct. We currently administer their grant through capital appropriations that we have for many, many years. And through that baseline grant, there are certain projects that benefit statewide processes and building techniques and cold climate applications. And then we also involve CCHRC in many other projects that we work on through an RFP process. Sometimes they win the project, sometimes they don't. But they are heavily involved in the research and the building dynamics of Alaska.
Follow up?
Certainly.
The reason I brought that up is that AHFC, Alaska Cold Climate Housing, let me get that correct, at the present time has been removed from the budget, and I'm a little concerned that they're kind of a necessary part, especially of your operation. Is that going to put a little kink in the works if we end up with that big cut to AHFC?
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, it's a good question. We're not sure. We currently have the ability to continue with a lot of the things that we are working on. They are a great partner for us, and they have been for many, many years. So we're not sure what their operation looks like moving forward. So,
okay, thank you.
Chris Tompkins.
Yeah, thank you. This is a question for HFC. What percentage of properties statewide are financed by you, by AHFC? Residential properties, that is.
Representative Chris Tompkins, through the chair, this is Stacey Barnes of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. About 20% of the residential properties in the state of Alaska are financed through Alaska Housing.
Follow-up?
Certainly.
So in effect, this bill creates a statewide building code for 20% of Alaska's residential properties, but the other 80%, unless they're in a municipality that already has a building code, are unaffected?
Through the chair, Representative Chris Tompkins, As I understand it, this building code would apply to new construction that would be financed in Alaska.
Representative?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you unpack that last statement, Ms. Barnes? New construction in Alaska, or can you unpack that statement, what that means?
Through the chair, Representative Kreistompkin, this is John Anderson again. Currently, because of our statute requirements and requiring building energy efficiency standards and building codes, AHFC has a higher standard than, let's say, Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac money. They do not have to follow that process unless they do fall within one of those authorities having jurisdiction that currently have that process or a standard that is equivalent and or more greater than ours. So outside of the areas that are regulated or that have this process, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac can come in and use their financing and don't really have to do anything.
Thank you. I'm maybe looking for a different kind of unpacking. So referring to the 80% of residential properties in Alaska that are not financed by, ultimately financed by AHFC and don't fall within a municipality that already has a building code, those are unaffected by this bill? And it's a question for Ms. Barnes.
Representative Kreistompkins, through the chair, this would apply to all communities across the state of Alaska if this bill were to pass.
Question for the sponsor. Can you reconcile that testimony with what you previously testified, that this relates only to AHFC financed properties? I guess just on a very basic level, I want to know what the bill does, and there seems to be a disparate understanding.
Through the chair, Representative Kreistompkins, Mary Perzik from staff to Representative Rasmussen. From our memo from legal, this applies to HFC buildings, but it also extends to municipal governments and requires that they adopt the same code. as I said earlier, not having an enforcement agency, there's not. In the example of Representative Klayman stated earlier, also John Anderson, people building outside of these constructs may or may not follow the code. So essentially not an 80%. I would say that they're much more far-reaching than the 20% because of municipalities, et cetera. But I would say there are some untouched, unaffected areas without the financing.
I have follow-up questions, but I can save them for later.
Okay. Representative Thompson.
This is good, but I wish it was far-reaching more. Back during the building of the pipeline up out of Fairbanks, outside of the city, there was a lot of substandard housing built. And it came to light a few years later when they were trying to sell them and the foundations weren't properly put in and things. So right now we're going to be having 300 to 500 houses built up in the Fairbanks area for these F-35s that are coming up. And there's been a lot of concern outside of the city and outside of where that they have a building code and inspections and you have to buy a building permit and it's actually, and we're worried right now that we're going to get substandard housing built again. And I wish there was a way to enforce that, you know, or that we could expand it away from where that the city has theirs, but houses being built out here haven't needed to follow the code, and they aren't financed by AHFC. I mean, these are financed by a building company that's going to put in four houses over here, and they, you know, and we're real concerned about the building, the substandard building, and so I wish this was far-reaching enough that we could cover larger, but I can see where you're going to have to hire inspectors and all that would be kind of expensive. But thank you very much. This is a good idea, good bill.
And Through the chair, this is Sarah Rasmussen, representative for District 22, for the record. I think that part of the problem with a widespread code outside of our jurisdiction, you know, regarding like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, is we step into federal territory where we wouldn't have jurisdiction on certain loan programs. I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, I've seen some, even in this last year in Sutton, some appraisals that I did that I'm looking at the foundation, it looks like the house could fall over, and I have no idea how a bank can finance that property. So that is 100% my concern, and my intention behind this bill is to protect consumers from poorly built properties. I'm open to any ideas you have as for amendments, if there's something that you feel would make this bill stronger and further protect consumers. But I also don't want to limit, as Representative Klayman stated, I don't want to take away the ability from somebody who wants to cash build a property for themselves to do what they choose with their land and their property if they're not choosing to use financing through the state. So it's kind of an internal struggle for me on that one.
Thank you.
Representative Klayman.
So instead of AHFC financing, now let's say Wells Fargo wants to finance a house that's not in any of these municipalities that would be covered by this law. And I would note, I'm, like Representative Thompson's, a big fan of building codes. I don't like the idea, whether it's in the city of Anchorage or the municipality of Anchorage or rural Deltana. I don't really like the idea of walking into a house that I have to worry whether it's constructed in a way that it would fall on me. I kind of don't like the idea. And so what's Wells Fargo do in some place that isn't covered by a city building code that applies to every building, every residence in the city, but now they're not in one of those cities? Do they require some kind of a building code when they're loaning on new construction?
Through the chair, this is Representative Rasmussen. Representative Klayman, I can't really give you a single answer with that question because it varies so much with every loan program from every different company. In reference to what Wells Fargo does, I'm just assuming that typically they will initially buy a mortgage and it's usually sold on the market. But they, I mean, for new construction, you're still required to do certain things during the process. You still have to, you know, there's certain tests in well and septic stuff that's required if it's well and septic properties. And
just assume something is beyond any of this municipal places where you have any of those requirements. This is a totally unregulated part of Alaska. What's a bank going to do?
I mean, they're still going to have, you would have to have an appraisal done on the property, but appraisers aren't certified in building code. I mean, that's outside of our scope of work. So there's, I know that that would be part of the process, but there wouldn't be any safeguarding for a home inspector per se, because a home inspection is optional in a transaction.
Well, I'll just a comment, not a question, but I can wait till later if you want.
Well, what I'm suggesting is we do have some invited testimony, and although Representative Rasmussen has a professional expertise, what I do know is this topic and previous renditions of the bill have been around, so perhaps some of our invited testimony may have some previous knowledge as to how this has perhaps led to why it hasn't made much progress legislatively and could address some of our questions. So are you okay with that, members, that we'll turn to our invited testimony? Thank you. We will first bring up Richard Carr, who I believe is in the room, and he is with the Alaska State Home Builders Association. We are also, our invited testimony, so everyone knows, is then Chris Rose of the Renewable Energy Alaska Project, Brad Austin of the training coordinator. He's the training coordinator and a plumbing code expert, and then Paul Grossi with the Alaska State Pipe Fitters and Trades. So we'll start with Mr. Carr. And if you would put yourself on the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you. Madam Chairman and members of the House Community and Regional Committee, my name is Richard Carr, and I am speaking as president of the Alaska State Home Building Association. First, let me start by saying that the Alaska State Home Building Association supports House Bill 76, and we want to say thank you to Representative Sarah Rasmussen for sponsoring this bill. I also wish to express thanks and appreciation to each and every one of you for bringing this issue forward and for all your sacrifices providing public service to our state. The Alaska State Home Building Association is a member-driven organization comprised of 6 local home building associations spread throughout the state. We monitor and engage in the legislative process on bills and public policies that impact residential construction and housing. Establishing a state residential building code has been a growing priority for our members. Alaska is a state that currently does not have a residential building code. A lot of thought and discussion has gone into this in order to bring us here today. Here's why we support HB 76. It benefits the state of Alaska and local communities. A statewide code can reduce insurance costs across the state as communities benefit from improved ISO ratings. Having a code adopted at the state level saves resources at the local level, as individual communities will not have to spend time and financial resources going through a separate code review, amendment, and adoption process. There is also increasing pressure to link federal mitigation grants and disaster assistance to the adoption of building codes. If such a linkage were established, states with a statewide code would be eligible for more grant funding and more disaster assistance than states without a statewide code. We support HB 76 also because it benefits consumers. Having one statewide code allows product manufacturers to benefit from economies of scale, as the same product and set of products will comply with a code in all parts of the state. This can result in cost savings, which can be passed on to the consumer. Also, homebuyers would have the security of knowing any home built in the state meets a widely accepted minimum standard for construction. As new editions of the code are adopted statewide, consumers benefit from homes that can incorporate new, improved, and or innovative building products and materials and methods of construction. The November 30th earthquake also demonstrated the difference between homes built with building codes and those without. There's also benefits to builders. Builders who work in multiple cities or boroughs benefit from the consistency and requirements provided by adopting a statewide code. When code adoption happens at the local level, a builder working in multiple communities and jurisdictions may end up having to comply with a patchwork of codes, code additions, and local amendments. This can lead to more rounds of plan review and debates with building officials over local interpretations. A consistent set of statewide building codes can lead to more consistent enforcement across the state and thus fewer conflicts between builders and building officials. In a word, it'd be more efficient. In conclusion, HB 76 is a good bill because it creates a starting point. Adopting the 2018 International Residential Code as a statewide code within AHFC provides a benchmark for housing construction. That's how I would characterize this, a benchmark. The bill does not create any enforcement measures or penalties. Instead, we will work with AHFC to create a standard code across the state for local governments and builders to use when they establish their own codes and standards. Thank you again. I hope we can provide you with information needed to advance this bill.
Okay. Questions from the committee? Representative Price Tompkins.
Thank you, and thanks for the testimony. Could you speak to where you see the greatest need for this legislation, in effect, the areas where you're seeing a lot of construction, where there are pronounced sort of construction integrity or quality questions or issues in Alaska? In effect, practically what this bill is solving.
Sure. I've been a builder.
Could you restate your name each time you speak so that the recordings?
Okay. Richard Carr with Alaska State Home Builders Association. I've been a builder and remodeler for 45 years. I started in Kodiak in 1974, and I've seen a lot of things. And the earthquake that we had on November 30th was an eye-opener for a lot of people, but it did not surprise me because I've seen a lot of this stuff, and it was just ready to go any minute type thing. I have done a lot of inspections. Right now, I currently build in the valley, Matsu Valley. I've done a lot of inspections on homes that incurred damage. I'll give you an example. One home we looked at, the footer under the stem wall, the foundation stem wall, actually did not have rebar in it. And when that earthquake hit, it decimated and completely cracked the footer. And of course, the house suffered great damage. And it's going to be a lot of expense to the homeowner. In the valley is a good example of where we need a statewide building code, because a lot of the portions of the valley do not have a building inspections like Palmer does, but pretty much the rest of the valley does not, unless they're financed through Alaska Housing Finance Corp. And the only thing I think that helps consumers right now is when they do closing on their loans, their long-term loans, it's the PUR 101 and 102 is required. And in order to get that, you either get it through a inspection service like Palmer, or you get it through a third-party home inspection, ICC certified. And that's widely done in the valley and absolutely worth the cost. And I think if that answers your question.
Follow up?
Certainly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that answer. So Matsu Valley is one area you mentioned. Are there other parts of the state that sort of come to particular attention where there's large amounts of construction or high rates of shoddy construction that don't currently fall under a municipal code?
I think if you get away from any of the building department jurisdictions, you risk the potential for a shoddy building. No one's watching it, and they have no standard, no benchmark to work by. A statewide building code would at least give a benchmark that builders say, I better do this or that. And most of the builders that I surround myself with and have friends with are competent and honorable, and they do build great homes and buildings. But unfortunately, I know very few that do not. And I would think a statewide building code might pitchfork them in to doing the right thing.
Follow up?
Certainly.
In the example that you gave before, Mr. Carr, in Mat-Su with a stem wall that didn't have rebar. Say this statewide building code had passed 10 or 20 years ago, and it was the law of the land, the law of Alaska, when that home was built. Say that home was built in the last 10 or 20 years, not knowing if that's true. I want to better understand, given that this is sort of a benchmark, but there's not an enforcement component, how, practically speaking, things might have unfolded differently. Because clearly you had a builder that maybe was deficient in scruples and didn't see any problem putting in the stem wall without rebar. How would the existence of this building code without enforcement have perhaps changed behavior?
Sure. All right, I'm a builder. I've been, like I said, a builder for 45 years.
Mr. Carr, every time you speak.
I apologize.
I know. It's a strange, but...
Richard Carr, Alaska State Home Building Association. Thank you. As a businessman, I would never risk building a home that would not meet code, because in the future, if something happened like did happen, I mean, there would be lawyers lined up behind the homeowner to get after me. Now, that, again, that's not why I do it, because I'm an honorable builder. But at least there's a benchmark, there's a standard by which the homeowner has regressed.
Follow-up?
Certainly.
And this is maybe as much a question for you as is a question for the sponsor to follow up on, but what I'm hearing in that answer is effectively the enforcement mechanism is litigatory, and that were there a statewide building code, it would provide regress or recourse, rather, for homeowners or whomever against any builder who doesn't abide by this code in the future, even if there aren't building inspectors going out to the Mat-Su or to wherever new construction is occurring.
Yes.
Thank you.
Clayman?
So, Mr. Carr, I just am curious, in your practice building in the Valley, Palmer has a code, so you build by the Palmer code. If you're outside the limits of Palmer, say in Wasilla, do you then still build according to the Palmer code, even though it's not required? Or how do you proceed in terms of your guidance when you're now outside the Palmer place where you have a code in place?
We have, as policy, follow the International Residential Building Code, IRC.
Follow-up?
Certainly.
And is that identical to Palmer or not completely?
I think Palmer leans heavily on the IRC.
Follow-up?
Certainly.
So that would mean in Palmer you're following the Palmer Code, and that the IRC was less stringent than the Palmer Code. When you're in Wasilla, you'd build according to the IRC. And then if there were more stringent standards in Palmer, you'd follow the more stringent standards in Palmer.
That's correct.
And one last follow-up. What's your experience with, if you're building new constructions, what is your experience with commercial lenders and what they're asking for the standards that you build to with commercial lenders? And I specifically mean not AHFC, because this is really about AHFC. I'm curious what your experience is with non-AHFC lenders.
Richard Carr, Alaska State Home Builders Association. I have found that most all the lenders that my customers deal with require ICC third-party inspection report, a PUR-101 or PUR-102, not only for a structural integrity but energy efficiency.
Paula?
Certainly.
Just to help my limited understanding of all those abbreviations, does that mean that those forms you're talking about essentially require compliance with the International Building Code or some other standard that's out there?
Yes, sir.
The International Building Code, not something else.
I can't speak for every loaning institute, but...
Only the ones you worked with?
Yeah.
Could you just tell us what PUR 101, PUR 102?
Sure. There are two separate things. One is structural integrity. the building has to, the bones of the building have to be done correctly. And the other one would be the energy efficiency of the building. It has minimum requirements.
And is PUR an acronym that stands for something, or is that?
John? John Bitney, me.
Okay. All, we want to make Mr. Bitney come on up. Let's make him earn some money.
Put him in the hot seat. Thank you.
You're too quiet.
My name is John Bitney. I represent the Alaska State Home Builders Association, and for what it may be worth, I did work as the legislative liaison at Alaska Housing Finance Corporation from 1995 to 2002. And I appreciate the PUR acronym question. I have never found out exactly what it stands for. Mr. Carr described what those reports are. They are inspection reports that accompany new construction on a building in order to guarantee, certify, whatever the correct term may be, that it has met the standards that are required for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to purchase the loan. And Madam Chair, if I could, I would like to speak a little bit to what I've heard.
Before we leave the PUR, though, so let me understand, is that an AHFC form and inspection?
Yes.
Or every lender out there uses them?
This is John Bitney again. It is a term at Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Okay. And the what drives the a lot of the market, if you will, is what's called the secondary mortgage market purchasers. So when you go, the example is given of Wells Fargo, for example, or any lender. What drives them is not their own internal requirements. What drives them is the requirements that are out there in the secondary market purchase, because lenders don't hold mortgages usually for more than 30 days. They bundle them and sell them to a secondary. And so their requirements are driven by those of the secondary. And in this case, Alaska Housing is a secondary, just like Fannie Mae and just like Freddie Mac. And as Mr. Anderson testified earlier, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac don't have requirements for a PUR 101 and a 102. However, what you're hearing from builders is we build, and a lot of realtors or whoever's selling homes will build and have those PUR 101s and 102s with the construction, even if they're not planning to have the loan purchased by HFC. If they ever sell it in the future, the home will qualify and has to have those in order to qualify for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. So, again, the enforcement out there is sort of the carrot, if you will. You build the home to the standard and have the PUR 101 and the 102 so that you have that resale option with the home. That's the driver, if you will, and I hope that helps answer the question.
I'm going to keep you there for a second because Representative Klayman and Thompson got my wheels spinning. So now we have the rich guy outside of the Fairbanks municipal boundaries who's built the gorgeous house 10 years ago, and now Representative Thompson would like to acquire it. There were no structural inspections because he was a cash build. So how does he, as the buyer now, when there wasn't a PUR 101 for the structural inspection done, how does he get it financed and prove up that the structure was inspected because it's covered with drywall and way under the earth?
Madam Chairman, may I ask John Anderson if he is online? What are you doing that?
Mr. Anderson, are you still available?
I am, Madam Chair. For the record, John Anderson again. There are many ways to achieve that. It is very costly. One of the requirements could be a process called deconstructive testing, where you actually have to go back in to verify certain things are done. And it would require engineering in some cases and third-party inspections to bring those processes into some type of a owner comfort level that they want to move forward with the purchase if there was no type of CO or inspection process performed on the properties.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Yes. Representative Drummond.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation, Mr. Carr. First, I'd appreciate having that in writing, your testimony.
Sure.
And tell me how this adoption of this code is going to help existing construction. A lot of folks have mentioned the earthquake and its impacts, and there were dozens, if not hundreds, of structures impacted in the South Central region by that earthquake. But do the home builders associations that you represent build only new construction, or do they also do remodeling and renovations on they may have a lot of business right now if they're in that business. How will this code help in the reconstruction of damaged buildings and existing buildings that ultimately will be sold?
Richard Carr, Alaska State Building Association. As I stated before, I'm a remodeler for many years, and the same codes would apply to remodeling, whether small or large remodeling projects. They are under the code that is existing, and the requirement would be to build that home or that building back to good condition using the current codes.
Paul? Certainly. So a building that was built, say, 25 years ago that was damaged in the earthquake and is going to be rebuilt will be rebuilt to current code, not to the code at the time that the structure was built.
My understanding is that it would have to be built to the current code. And unfortunately, the cost would have to be passed on to the consumer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And... Madam Chair, and do you have any idea how much this will cost municipalities and boroughs to implement?
Richard Carr, I do not know that.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Carr? We're going to let you step back, and the sponsor has an answer to one of our questions. So we're going to bring her back up before we call our next invited testimony. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, this is Representative Sarah Rasmussen, District 22. Through the chair, the response to Representative Drummond for the cost to municipalities and boroughs, I would imagine it would be very minimal, if any, because what we're doing is the costs go to the consumer if there were any incurred costs. As far as the change in code for a property that was built 25 years ago, for example, that property would have to probably go through a home inspection, and then it would have to meet the current code. So it would protect buyers who are getting mortgages now. Now, if somebody has lived in their home for 25 years and they're not selling it, there wouldn't be a change, or I guess refinancing potentially could have them be forced to bring their home up to code for a refinance option.
Follow up.
Yes.
Thank you for that response. I didn't mean passing on the cost to the consumer. I meant for municipalities and boroughs to replace whatever code they're currently using with this particular code before they even begin to apply it to inspections of construction. What will that cost municipalities and boroughs to put in place?
Through the chair, I know Anchorage, for example, the code is above the International Building Code or IRC, so that code meets or exceeds what the state statute is trying to do. I haven't looked at the other three areas, but I'm happy to look at that and get an answer back to you.
Okay. Representative Clayman, did you have a question?
I do have two different questions. First, I looked in the support letters and whatnot. I don't see anything from the from any of the municipalities. Have you contacted the municipality of Anchorage and other municipalities to see whether they support or oppose this bill?
Through the chair, this is Representative Rasmussen. I will reach out to the existing municipalities with building codes.
And then on a different topic, Madam Chair, maybe I got confused by the example that Representative Drummond asked, but my impression, if I've had a house for 25 years and it was built under the then existing building code and then I sell it 25 years later and the building code has changed, I always had the understanding that the existing structure did not have to be brought up to the new code for sale. Has something changed that I'm not aware of?
Through the chair, this is Representative Rasmussen and Representative Klayman. So zoning is grandfathered in a transaction if it's the zoning issue. As far as the building codes, they honestly can change yearly from speaking to home inspectors. You do have to bring your house up to a certain code. So typically in the transaction, you're going to meet health and safety items. There may be other items that have changed in the code that you negotiate between the buyer and seller. But through the health and safety codes that change, I would say that those are not grandfathered, and you do have to have your home up to a certain standard to sell.
Follow up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. When you're referencing different codes, that gets me confused.
Sorry.
So, a health and safety code, I think that has more to do typically with plumbing things and air circulation systems. But let's say that the house was built 25 years ago and the requirement for stud walls at that point were 24 inches on center. And now the building code requires that stud walls be 16 inches on center. What's going to happen with the building code in a 25-year change?
Through the chair, this is Representative Rasmussen. The way that the bill reads that if it's an Alaska housing loan and the house was constructed after 1992, they would have to be in compliance with the IRC.
Follow up. So that would mean specifically with regard to building issues, if in fact in 1993 the building code where my house was built required 24-inch on center stud walls and that was the entire house, and then now let's say their code requires they couldn't get a loan on the house at all without basically tearing down the whole house and rebuilding the walls at 16 inch on center. That's how you're reading this law, this code requirement.
Through the chair, from my understanding, it would have to meet the IRC code, right, for an Alaska housing loan.
Well, but that's, you're not really answering the question. My question is, if the IRC code requires 16 inch on center for all the interior stud walls, or all the walls for that matter, interior and exterior walls, and the code in 1993 when I built the house required only 24 inch in center, the answer is the buyer would basically, the whole house would have to come down to qualify for an AHFC loan, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Representative Price Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question along similar lines. I mean, in effect, if this passes, you're going to have a whole class, thousands or tens of thousands of buildings, residential properties potentially in Alaska that are unfinanceable.
Through the chair, that I would say is not correct because we still have Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac loans that would not apply to this statute. It would just eliminate one of many loan programs that are available to consumers.
Okay.
Alaska housing specifically would be eliminated from this specific option. Through the chair, one other piece to consider, I guess, is Alaska housing loans. Moving forward, if we were to adopt the building code, it would not only protect consumers, but it could protect the state, because if Alaska housing weren't following, you know, this isn't in statute, so if they didn't choose to follow the IRC, they could potentially loan on a property that isn't built correctly, and if the borrower defaulted on the loan, it would become an expense to the state.
Follow up? Thank you, Madam Chair. Noted, thank you for your answer. I think getting back to Representative Clayman's scenario, say you've got a house that was built in the Mat-Su where there wasn't a building code, and yet you had an honorable builder like Mr. Carr who built it and built it to building code at the time. I guess I want to confirm my understanding to your previous answer to Representative Clayman's question that that house would not be financeable by HFC because it was built to code at the time by Mr. Carr, even if that wasn't, you know, 24-inch on center studs was the going code, that it just seems unreasonable that that house should be unfinanceable by HFC.
Through the chair, I am, like I said before, willing to look at amendments. If you feel that there is an appropriate amendment, we're definitely willing to consider it. If we can make the bill better, I just want to try to protect consumers and the state the best that we can.
I'll make a comment. I mean, if that in fact is an implication of the bill, I'm probably not interested in going into the weeds to come up with an amendment myself, but I would invite you to do so.
Representative Clayman.
This is a broader question. A municipality certainly has the authority to enact a building code that applies to every building, whether it be a residential building or a commercial building in the entire municipality or the city. Does the state have that authority? I mean, without saying, okay, this only applies to AHFC, but could we as a legislature pass a law that said this is the statewide building code and it will apply to everything that's constructed in the state and it establishes the minimum standard? And then as part of that, in the way Representative Christ Tompkins and I have been asking queries, could we say essentially create grandfather provisions that recognize that if a home was constructed according to the codes in place at the time, then they didn't have to be reconstructed to come up to the minimum standard going forward? But do we have that authority as a state to create a statewide building code rather than just impose this on AHFC?
Through the chair, this is Representative Rasmussen. I can reach out to legal on what our authority is. I think enforcing it would be difficult at the municipal level. The enforcement is through the building or the permit process that they have to go through. To complete the loan, you have to have, you know, the final permitting process. So that would, if the state were to do something like that, it would require another level of enforcement that the state would have to come out to each property and provide those permits, and it would just be another level of permitting, I think, to enforce it.
Representative Drummond, you had a.
I'm not sure technically how it's described, but the municipality of Anchorage and the its neighborhoods of Eagle River and Chugiak have somewhat differing building codes and inspection requirements. Will the institution of this statewide code impact that relationship and beef up the standards in Eagle River that seem to be the subject of much finger pointing as a result of the earthquake?
Through the chair, this is Representative Rasmussen. Yes, in Anchorage, the municipality follows Title 21, and from my understanding, Eagle River and Chugiak follow certain parts of that code, but not all of it. So this would basically just set the standard at the IRC handbook. The International Residential Code is what everyone would follow, but I believe that Anchorage could still have the higher provisions in their building code. So it may not equalize Eagle River and Anchorage, but it would bring Eagle River up if they aren't crime. I would imagine they're currently at the International Residential Code level. But I can double check on that as well.
Follow up. And yet they still had all these problems, even though they're already following the IRC.
Through the chair.
I don't know. I'm just having a hard time figuring out how this is going to improve things in communities that already have robust building codes.
Through the chair, this is Representative Rasmussen. From what I saw, a lot of the major damage on homes in the Eagle River and Chugiak area were homes built in the 70s and 80s. I didn't see very many, if any, new construction homes that were severely damaged.
All right. We're going to get back to our invited testimony. Representative Tompkins?
Yeah, just put a thought on the record. I mean, I think this discussion is important. I mean, the scenario Representative Klayman asked about and sort of understanding the interaction with municipalities that already have building codes. And I think for the sponsor's reference or interested parties, as much as anything, I sort of also want to flag. I mean, I think I like the thrust of this bill. It seems like the details are very devilish and maybe require further vetting. But I'm sort of also interested and or concerned about the implication of this sort of dragnet approach that would include rural Alaska and communities that are so sort of off the system and off-road. And so I'm not going to pursue a line of questions along that line, but I just want to put that on the record for reference in the future.
And through the chair, this is Representative Rasmussen. I appreciate those comments, and I know firsthand that through my husband, who's a loan originator to Lasky USA, he's done loans in Dutch Harbor. He's done loans in Dillingham, Bethel. I mean, there's through Alaska Housing, there are loans happening, you know, all over the state. And I think that it's important that consumers are being protected in places where we don't have a standard of building code. And we also need to protect the state because we're making a financial investment in a property that may or may not have the value that it's assumed to have at the time of the purchase. If the borrower goes into default and it comes back onto the state as an expense, we may not have the asset that we thought that we had based on the lack of compliance with how they built the property.
Follow up.
I don't really want to continue to engage in debate right now because we do have invited testimony, but I think it is clear that we have interest and support in the goal of protecting consumers in Alaska, but have been introduced to why this bill has been around for a number of years and the complexity of the issue for us as lay legislators who aren't in the industry, that there is a lot of details that we need some additional information from. I believe we have some additional information that can be provided to us today through invited and online. I've got 16 people signed up besides invited testimony. So perhaps some of our concerns could be met today. But I suspect things like reaching out to municipalities about the intersect with current building codes, what this obligates them to do or not do, there's still some research to be done just from that. After two of our testimonies from the sponsor and one, so I suspect the list will get longer of information we need to have gathered.
May I make a comment that maybe Please. Future invited testimony can speak to? I mean, I think to Representative Rasmussen's question, that's all fine and good on the AHFC side, but it was previously stated that there's going to be legal exposure for anybody who builds a building not in compliance, which in my mind is probably as big or the bigger implication of this bill that needs to be considered. So I guess the scenario that any maybe future testifiers could speak to is I'm not so much concerned about hub cities like Bethel, Dillingham, and Onalaska, which from my perspective are kind of large cities, but I'm talking about the Port Alexanders and the Kaufman Coves and the Queeflex. And so if basically anybody who doesn't build a code in like really small town Alaska suddenly has legal exposure, and if any testifiers could speak to that, I'd appreciate it.
Okay. Our next invited testimony is online, Chris Rose with the Renewable Energy Alaska Project. Chris?
Good morning. My name is Chris Rose. I'm the executive director of Renewable Energy Alaska Project. We are a statewide nonprofit coalition of more than 80 organizations, including utilities and independent power producers. And Native corporations, environmental groups, and so on that have since 2004 been promoting renewable energy and energy efficiency. And we support this bill, House Bill 76. Our interest is energy efficiency. This would be a prospective forward-looking bill, so it just means that all new construction from now on statewide would have to meet the minimum IRC standards, which include energy efficiency standards. My understanding is that the municipalities that are referenced in the testimony earlier today, like Anchorage, Juneau, Fairbanks, already use as a minimum the IRC, and HFC as a minimum already uses the IRC. So I don't see, from my perspective, there being a big impact on those municipalities. This is, from my understanding, to be applied statewide, not just to HFC, and not because, as Mr. Carr referenced, that there is right now a situation where home builders are dealing with a patchwork of codes. They may work in Anchorage, and they may work outside of Anchorage where there is no code. They may work in Fairbanks. They may work just outside of Fairbanks where there is no code. So they have to constantly work on dealing with different standards, and this would help them from that perspective, and just making sure that there's a statewide minimum standard. As was also testified to, this bill would not set up any kind of enforcement mechanisms for buildings that are built outside of a municipality that has an enforcement mechanism today. But the carrot and the motivation for builders outside of that of outside municipalities would be that they would want to say at some point in the future that they had built a code for resale, or they may want to do it just so they could get financing as they build the home. So I don't know if this bill has been really focused on the self-builder, the person who builds a home for themselves. I really think it's more focused on professional builders who are building outside of places that already have the IRC as a minimum. So we're really supportive of the effort here to have a statewide code, particularly on the energy efficiency side. As representatives know, the state put a lot of money into weatherization programs that AHFC successfully administered. Over 50,000 homes were able to be weatherized, and they were able to cut their energy bills by about an average of 30%. That's saving the state collectively a lot of money, and homeowners a lot of money. So it just makes sense that from now on that we have a standard to build homes that in the future are more energy efficient. So from our perspective, it makes a lot of sense just to set a statewide code that has minimum standards, including energy efficiency standards. And I'd be happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you. Out of curiosity, your organization with energy efficiencies, do you interact and work with Alaska Coal Climate Housing?
Through the chair, this is Chris Rose. Yes, Representative Thompson all the time. And we've worked with both HFC and Coal Climate Housing Research Center on this issue for the last several years.
I don't know if you heard, but I had to say earlier, Coal Climate Housing has been cut $1 million that they receive to keep organized and working has been cut out of the budget. Is that going to have an effect on their ability to do what you do with them?
Through the chair, yes, Representative Thompson, I think that would be a real problem for the state if CCHRC were defunded. They provide an amazing amount of service, not only to HFC, but to the public at large, and we would hate to see them defunded. That would be a real problem for the state.
Thank you.
Thank you. And just, Representative Thompson, so you know, Cold Climate Housing is online to testify. They weren't one of our invited, so I'd like to get through our invited, and then we'll make sure that you have the opportunity to ask them that question directly. Any other questions for Mr. Rose? All right. Then we have Brad Austin, who is our next. And Paul, you're going to go side by side. Okay. So if you'll join us at the table, please.
Madam Chair and the committee, I'm Paul Grassi. I'm here representing the Alaska State Pipe Trade. Beside me is Brad Austin. He is one of our training coordinators, and he's also a plumbing code expert. We're here to oppose this bill, at least in part. And you've already touched on our first problem we have with the bill is, what does it apply to? What does it apply to? We couldn't, you know, after reading the bill a number of times, we couldn't determine if this applies to just Alaska Housing, or does it apply statewide? Does it apply to all residential, or does it just apply to fourplexes? The way it's written, we couldn't tell. So that was our first thing. So we weren't really sure how to address some of this. But we, regardless of what the application is, our concern is that it lowers the standard for plumbing. We're going to concentrate on plumbing. We think some of this applies to electrical as well. But there's already a statewide plumbing and electrical code, and this would change that. It would make it the statewide plumbing code is the UPC, the Uniform Plumbing Code, and it applies to residential plumbing as well as commercial, and it, you know, it addresses all the those issues. This would change it to the International Residential Code, the IRC, and it is a lower standard. It's a standard that is not as robust as I think Representative or Madam Chair said. It is it's less stringent, and the statute talks about that other municipalities can adopt a standard, but it has to be at least as strong as the current statute, or more stringent.
Could I?
Yes.
Through the chair, this is Brad Austin. So the International Residential Code contains chapters on plumbing and electrical mechanical. It's not just a structural building code. So we already have an existing plumbing code in the state, and so the way the bill is written, I see this as having two plumbing codes, because there is no carve-out for the plumbing code.
So the big issue is, first of all,
Paul Grassi.
This is Paul Grassi, through the chair. The main issue is this would lower the standard for at least for some structures in Alaska for plumbing, and probably electrical too. But that we're concerned on health and safety issues on that, and also it would not require, if you adopt this, it would not require a plumbing license or an electrical license, which we call a certificate of fitness, which is a state criteria that involves certain training, certain experience, certain and testing by the state to determine whether someone is has the knowledge to perform this work. So we again see that as a safety and health issue. So these are the areas that we're concerned with. However, we do think that they have that there's a need for building codes for structure for the building itself, and we don't have to reinvent the wheel on this. I think Representative Thompson already talked about this, that they have a code that covers that adopts the IRC and for housing in Fairbanks. And we did a cursory search on the internet and found that actually there were at least seven communities that have adopted the IRC, but have carved out for plumbing and electrical, so that those standards would still be met. Those stronger standards would still be met. So we think there's a way of doing this, but the issue that we got confused over was what buildings does this apply to? And the odd thing about this is it's all the other building codes with the state are in Title 18, but they're lodged as a separate section. This is a subset in the Alaska housing. So we didn't know what they were trying to do. We think they're trying to adopt a statewide code, but we're not sure that this does that. So with that, I think if Brad has anything to add, he could give you details on some of the ways the other municipalities do these types of carve-outs. You can talk about the requirements of the certificate of fitness, the plumbing license, and also the electrical license. And he could also talk about the differences in the codes, the plumbing sections of the codes itself. So with that, okay. I think we just...
So, Mr. Austin, I do have to have you state your affiliation. We got your name, but not your affiliation.
Oh, okay.
But let me see if there's questions for Mr. Grassi first. Mr. Thompson, Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, Paul, I see where you're going with your questioning on the bill itself. I think municipality, City of Fairbanks, we adopted a plumbing code, we adopted electrical code, we adopted the building side of the code, you know, and we have inspectors that all the way through a process of building a structure of any kind, they have to be an inspector there before that, when they compact the ground, before they are ready to put in the foundation, right on through every aspect of it. Clear up to where if you're going to replace a furnace in your house, you're supposed to get a permit, and it's got to be inspected to make sure it was plumbed in right and electrically put in correct. That's fine in a municipality, but I think this bill is trying to address outside of a municipality where we have the Wild West going on with building right now. And I don't know how we separate that, and I think that's where you're going, isn't it? Is it confusion?
Representative Thompson, through the chair, Paul Grassi. You know, we actually, the interesting thing about this, plumbing and electrical is actually statewide already.
Yeah.
Now, there are some limitations on the size of the community to address Representative Chris Tompkins' question. But, you know, which you can do with this as well if you wanted to. But there already is in existence a statewide plumbing and electrical code. But there isn't a statewide building code.
Residential building code.
On that line, then, Mr. Grassi, our earlier questions about how is it inspected, who does the enforcement of the statewide plumbing and electrical code in Kwikluk and in Port Alexander and in Craig, Alaska?
Madam Chair, for those communities, I think they don't have plumbing inspecting and electrical inspecting because they're too small. So the smaller communities don't have it. But for example, I think one of the discussions that was brought up by Representative Christ Tompkins was that you know what are the area of concern, and the valley was mentioned. Well, the valley is covered under the plumbing and electrical codes, and those are inspected by the state of Alaska. So it depends on the size of the community right now, and you, as a legislature, could make that decision as to what, you know, what size communities you want to include.
Okay, so let's go back and narrow it down from the state of Alaska broadly. Who does the inspection? Is it Department of Labor?
Madam Chair, it is the Department of Labor, yes.
Okay. Do those inspections vary depending on the budget the Department of Labor is given for inspections? So in robust years, there's thorough inspections of every permit, and in lean years, there's no inspections because we just sign off, or does it hold up construction?
Madam Chair, it's our experience that when the state had lots of money, the inspections were much more often and much more thorough. As there's budget constraints, it's more difficult let me give you an example. In Juneau, the state does the inspecting, but when the budgets are low, it's a little harder for the one inspector for Southeast to get to all the projects. But that's a matter of funding. It's not a matter of law. The law is there to protect the consumers.
So, but if you It's a lean year. There's nobody to come do the plumbing inspection or the electrical inspection that are statewide already. Does that hold up the project and they've got to wait till July 1 when there's more funds for the Department of Labor to come do the inspection, but in June there's very few inspections? And I'm new at this game, but I'm just speculating that's how my fiscal year goes.
You know, Madam Chair, I don't know the answer to that, and I don't want to give you just something off the top of my head. So we will get back. If you give us some time, we'll look into that and try to find out the answer to that. But I think I know when I was actually doing the trade, you pretty much had to wait till the inspector came. But they came. This was a long time ago when there's plenty of money for this kind of things. But now I'm not completely sure.
Okay. Rep. Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Out of curiosity, there is state inspectors, but like the city of Fairbanks, they have their electrician, their electrical inspector, their plumbing inspector, their structural. Does the state double up on that, or are they certified to okay it? If they're certified by the state, basically, but they were a city employee, is that also? It's not duplicated with the state inspector and the local inspector.
Representative Thompson, through the chair, no, it's not duplicated. As a matter of fact, Anchorage also has their own inspectors, and they inspect, and that satisfies the state requirements. In fact, Anchorage has actually more stringent standards, so. So the inspectors would inspect for the Anchorage standard.
Representative Christ Tompkins and then Clayman.
Yeah, thank you. And this is really helpful information and maybe just a suggestion for next hearing, if it would be possible to have somebody from the Department of Labor perhaps to.
We do have somebody online from the Department of Labor standards to answer questions. So.
Well, and maybe a question for that person then, which is, I mean, would this person from the Department of Labor be able to speak to the scenario previously asked about by you, Madam Chair, which is how do those inspections presently work, especially in small communities? And I guess an associated question I have is, you know, right now we've got a statewide building code, a statewide electric code. In a certain sense, I think my sort of previous line of questioning to Representative Rasmussen is relevant, in that if somebody doesn't build to the building or electric code and for whatever reason there's not an inspection, is the person who sells that house, the person who built that house, at legal exposure?
Terry Gales, are you online out there?
Through the chair, this is Terry Gales, Deputy Director of Labor Standards and Safety.
So we've been grilling and talking about agencies and inspections. Can you speak to that?
Once again, through the chair, this is Terry Gales, Deputy Director of Labor Standards and Safety. The mechanical inspection section is self-funded through licensing, issuing out licenses, and we kind of adjust how we go out and do the inspections based on getting the most bang for our buck, essentially. To answer to that question, I think there was another question that was asked, but I also want to add that for plumbing, for communities less than 2,500, there are no codes, and so we don't go out and inspect in those communities. And electrical, everyone is held to that, the electrical standard.
So, Mr. Gales, let me verify. So, plumbing code has a population threshold at where it's applied, but the electrical code does not. That is universal to every square inch of Alaska.
Correct, and that's above the threeplexes and above is what we inspect for electrical. And that's based on statute.
Follow up? To clarify then, for electrical inspections would not occur with a duplex or a single family residential home. There would be no inspection by DOL of those structures. Is that accurate?
Correct.
And this is represented.
But the standard still applies.
Could you clarify that? The standard applies, but there is no inspection.
Right. The electric code standard still applies regardless, but we, based on statute, only inspect threeplexes and above.
Representative Drummond?
Sorry, fourplexes and above. I'm sorry about that.
Fourplexes.
So if this is Representative Drummond, so if the standard, the electrical standard still applies statewide and you only inspect three or four plexes or larger, then who's inspecting the single family and the duplex and the triplex that's built in a community of less than 2,500? I guess that's the answer.
For the plumbing code, I'm sorry, this once again, this is Tariq Gales, Deputy Director of Labor Standards and Safety. For the plumbing code, there is no code for in communities 2,500 or less. And for electrical, local government agencies tend to do those inspections, municipalities or something like that. But our statute, we only inspect essentially fourplexes and above.
And this is Representative Hannon. The plumbing code inspections, are those only fourplexes and above?
No, ma'am. Once again, this is Tariq Gales, Labor Standards and Safety. That's for all structures.
Okay, single-family dwellings, and as long as so as long as the census showed that the community has 2,501 people, then the state has responsibility for plumbing inspection.
Correct.
Okay. Representative Clayman.
From the discussion, it sounds like we can set a code and then set a benchmark in where we actually require inspections. We don't have to require the inspections. We can just set a code at will. Is that your understanding?
Can you repeat the question?
Could we pass a building code without requiring inspections? Is there anything about having a code that requires us to have inspections?
Yes, we can. I mean, that's essentially the way it is for electrical.
So if I'm out in a community of 1,000 people and I build a fourplex, are you going to have to go out to that 1,000-person community and inspect the electrical, even though they can do whatever they want with plumbing? But as to electrical, do you then have to fly out and assume might take a boat if the ferry's not running? But would you have to go out to the community of 1,000 and inspect the electrical for the fourplex?
Right. Well, once again, this is Tariq Gales, Labor Standards and Safety. In communities like that, there may be no permitting process. And so as a state, we don't have a permitting process. So if we find you or, stumble upon the building and we could inspect then, but because there's no, like, large permitting process, we don't always know where these buildings are being built in communities like that.
Follow-up?
Certainly.
So what happens in a community of 5,000 that doesn't have its own building codes and now I'm on electrical, do you have to go out to the community of 5,000 and inspect the electrical?
We do. We go out to those communities and perform inspections, yes.
And that's, follow-up, that's because that community, or because to get the electrical, since it's, they have to apply to you to get the electrical, they have to apply to you to get a permit to do the electrical work.
There are no permits with the state for this.
Now I'm actually
there's licensing that's done, but there are no permits.
Well, I guess I'm a little bit confused, and maybe I'm confusing permits and licenses and whatnot. But tell me how the state comes to go and inspect any building that's not in an organized municipality that has their own building code. How does it come to you that you should go inspect a building, any building?
Yes, sir. So we once again, this is Tariq Gales, Labor Standards and Safety, and through the chair, we send our inspectors out to different parts of the state, and as they come upon construction, we ensure that they have proper licensing and that they're following the codes when we come to those construction sites.
Follow-up?
Representative Clayman.
So that just means you send somebody out to Bethel they drive around town and look to see if there's construction going on, and you look at, see if the contractor has a license to do electrical work, and if they do, then you might look at the construction to see how the work is going.
That is 100% correct.
Follow up?
Certainly.
But if for budget reasons there's nobody going to Bethel this year, there's nobody checking in on the contractors in Bethel to see whether or not they have licenses and whether the work they're doing meets code.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Gales, since we have you there, and this now brings us back to, has the travel budget for the upcoming fiscal year for the Department of Labor Standards and Safety been cut in half like other parts of travel at the Department of Labor and all executive agencies, or has the labor and standard and safety inspections been held harmless?
Once again, this is Tariq Gales, Labor Standards and Safety, through the chair. In the current proposed budget, yes.
Yes,
what? Yes, what? Yes, you've been cut by 50%?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So could we conclude from that that there will be 50% less state inspections of electrical work in the state in the next fiscal year?
Three Gales, through the chair. I mean, there's going to be an adjustment. We'll have to be as smart and efficient as we can when we send folks to the different communities around the state. But there will be less inspections, obviously. Yes.
Thank you. Representative Drummond.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Gales, at the outset of your testimony, you said that the mechanical section is self-funded through issuance of licenses, I assume. Who pays for the travel? Is that the builder of the structure that you're traveling to inspect?
Tariq Gales, Labor Standards and Safety, through the chair. It through the receipts that we receive. That's how our budget is based.
Follow up. It's the source of the funding for the travel or reimbursement for the travel. You said the mechanical section is self-funded through licenses, and I assume you have receipt authority for collection of those funds through licenses. Is that same fund the one that pays for the travel that is required to inspect in remote places?
Tariq Gales, through the chair, yes, it's the designated general fund, and it's the building safety fund. And that's what we use. Yes, ma'am.
Follow up?
Yes.
So if that's being cut in half, if your travel funding or a general fund is being cut in half, it seems like that's going to limit the ability of your crew to travel to make these inspections, isn't it?
It's through the chair, Tariq Gales. It's not that the funds have been cut, but our budget authorization for travel has been cut.
Follow up.
Certainly.
So you can, so even if you, even if your travel was being reimbursed by the licensing, you couldn't do the travel because your fund was being cut? I'm kind of confused.
Or authorization to spend that certain amount of travel funds, that we're authorized to spend that amount of money. And so that's what we base that on, is what we're authorized to spend on travel.
Okay. So if it's cut in half, I assume you'll be doing half as much traveling. Yeah. And if structures are being built, they may be going out, but going without inspection. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Klayman.
Since we're talking about these, the funds that come from the licenses, do the licenses fully fund this travel and inspection function, or do the licenses, the revenue generated by the licenses only provide a portion of that cost? If no.
Tariq Gales, Labor Standards and Safety, through the chair. We don't, the mechanical inspection uses no general funds. It's all based on the receipts.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Gales, because we have you online. Earlier today, we had some questions about how currently AHFSB holds all construction to this residential standard, and we had some questions about state obligations for those inspections. Can you speak to that? Do you currently, at Labor Standards and Safety, do those inspections on AHFC properties that are in rural communities?
Labor Standards and Safety, Tariq Gales, and through the chair, yes, we do.
Okay. And if House Bill 76 were passed, would that expand the number of inspections you need to do or not change them because it only applies to AHFC properties?
Tariq Gales, Labor Standards and Safety, through the chair. We believe that currently the way the bill is written, it would eliminate the plumbing code.
It would eliminate
for our ability to enforce the plumbing code. And it may even eliminate the certificate of fitnesses as well.
Okay. All right. Either of the two. Do we have any more questions for Mr. Gales, Mr. Grassi, or Mr. Austin? I see none. We clearly are not going to be done with the public testimony, the number of people who are online in the couple minutes that we have remaining. I do have one person who has signed up to testify who's here in the room. And so I'm going to take his testimony because he's here today with us. And then we will hold this bill. We are not intending to move it today. I think we still have in the neighborhood of a billion questions to mull over. But I'll have Mr. Banaszak, Mr. Victor Banaszak, who's vice president of the State Home Builders Association, who has signed up online. And for the cold weather climate housing research in Fairbanks, Mr. Thompson, Representative Thompson had to leave, so I'm going to leave you off the hook. He has specific questions about your funding, but we'll come back to that. Mr. Banaszak. Please.
Good morning, Madam Chairman and the members of the House Committee and Regional Affairs Committee. My name is Victor Banaszak. I'm the president of the Southeast Home Builders Association and the vice president of the Alaska State Home Builders Association. My comments today are on behalf of myself, but I hope next year to have the opportunity to speak to you again on this bill. I'll be serving as role of president with the State Home Builders that President Richard Carr is currently speaking today. I support HB 76. Alaska is only one of 11 states that does not have a statewide residential building code. HB 76 will adopt a code that builders know and understand. Obviously, consumers will benefit from better construction quality. State and local governments can benefit from having a consistent standard statewide that everyone, both consumers and in the industry, should be able to understand. One of the major insurance companies has told us that in issues, situations that we had, like the November earthquake, it will make Alaska eligible for 25% additional funds, the FEMA funds, which is great public policy. It's going to help us all the way around and also in disaster situations. There's many important issues facing our state with the short time remaining in the session, so I really appreciate you bringing this bill to committee. I don't want to take a lot of your time, but I do want you to know that I support this bill, and I'm committing to working with the sponsor and everyone here in this room toward making this a good bill that can ultimately be passed into law. There's a couple things I wanted to clear up. ASHPA, who is Alaska State Home Builders, do want to see this apply to all new construction, residential new construction, not just the AHFC. AHFC has... Mr. Anderson has made a comment in the past that it's not a level playing field right now because they're holding everybody to high standards, so people will go to somebody from down south who has a lower standard. Therefore, we don't have equivalent. It's not apples to apples. Another note I wanted to make is that this would apply to current building. This would not be if you were to sell a home. You don't have to tear the house down. like Representative Klayman was concerned about, this would be, you know, if there's health and safety issues, you're talking about railings, grippable rails, things that could be dangerous. A child could fall through, like 6-inch spacing versus 4-inch spacing. It's not tearing the house down. It's ensuring that a new owner does not get hurt in that situation. Or another situation is air quality. In years past, they have come through and wanted to tighten up houses. Well, a year later, a lot of these families are showing breathing issues and health issues, respiratory problems. That's because they made the house tight, but they didn't know how to exchange the air and how to ventilate it properly. So it's things like this that we want to eliminate and get a standard. And we're not trying to overwrite, for instance, the UPC, which is the Uniform Plumbing Code that Mr. Brad has spoken about. We're just trying to establish a minimum. And all the municipalities that we currently have are significantly above that. We just want to make sure that where there is either no code at all or minimal, we want to make sure that those are also held to some type of a minimum standard. We're not trying to overwrite or destroy anybody else's standard. We just want a minimum to follow. And one note about the earthquake that I wanted to make very, very clear, and that is that that was, I believe, a 7.2, and that exceeded the design loads on those houses. Even current standards, if you look around the world, there are 5-6.0 earthquakes that have caused thousands and thousands of deaths, and the houses are all collapsed. We had over a 7.0 earthquake, and there was very minimal damage. And the reason, and so anyway, the damage that you see was not necessarily indicative of a horribly subpar house. It's just that that earthquake was very high, and it extended for over a minute, which exceeds the design loads on a lot of those houses. And so the fact that they stood up shows what our codes do in Alaska. The fact that they stood up to something that exceeded the design load is pretty impressive. So I appreciate your time.
Any questions?
All right. Seeing no questions from the members of the committee, we're going to gavel out. We're going to hold House Bill 76 in committee, and I apologize to everyone who's online and called in. I appreciate you listening today, and we will certainly give public notice prior to the next hearing and give the opportunity for public testimony to continue. So I'm not going to gavel out from public testimony, and I guess I forgot to gavel in for public testimony. But we took one, and our next meeting of the Community and Regional Affairs Committee will be next Tuesday in this room, and we are adjourned at 10:02.